Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Black Thoughts and Theory, the radio show. I, of course, am Alex Primo. I'll be joined by the lovely Asha Zuri, the wonderful Z-Level Scott, and, of course, the good brother Dennis Jefferson. Tonight, we will be talking to you folks about Lost and Stolen Land. That's America's legacy to the melanated man. Land that's been lost by theft, trickery, thievery, deception, stolen by force, interrogation, terroristic attitudes, and terroristic violence. I'm going to make up words tonight, most likely. And I say that because when you look at the history of Black America and when you see what's been done, you can't help but fumble your words and make up new words and say things that you might not want to say all the time. But the bottom line is, we have had millions of acres worth of land literally slip through our fingertips, and mostly because of deviousness, deception, and deviltry, evil, wickedness, just people being nasty. So we will go through some different episodes of Black folks losing their land in America. We'll do that tonight. We will also cover a couple of current events if we have time. And by the way, I want to apologize for that little bit of technical difficulty. I'm getting an update here that the engineers are currently working on these issues, so it's nothing with us or with you. Your phone's okay, your internet's okay. Is there something going on with the engineer? So if we don't have time to get to all of the important points tonight, we can do a part two next week, so don't worry about it. Now, the first thing I want to bring to your attention is the whole idea of how do people get wealth in America? Now, I don't mean like literally how do you go get rich or, you know, hidden lotto, something like that. I'm talking about the good old-fashioned basics. So in America, what do you think people use as their source of wealth or statement of wealth? Well, actually, most people use their property as their biggest asset, which is their statement of wealth. They say, well, I own this or I own that. So something that you own in America typically accounts for about 50% of your assets. So if you're in the middle class of America, you're probably claiming property as a big portion of your wealth. So I submit this to you. What if 100 years ago I prevented your people, your family, your loved ones from owning that land? What would it look like? And that's what we're dealing with as black people in America. We're dealing with the reality that land was literally ripped out of our hands over 100 years ago. One thing that I try to convince people of is not so much to be distrustful of everyone, but to be aware of the true history of everyone. Know what the leaders of our nation have done historically. Know what the Caucasians in our society have done historically. Know what black people have been through historically. Know these things so you too can make good decisions. Because without that, you're vulnerable to going through the same things over and over again, the same negative activities, the same negative deception, the same deviltry that got our ancestors can get you too if you're not wise, if you're not aware of what's going on. So let's go back a little bit. Let's go back and look at a couple of towns that we had some problems in. And when I talk about a couple of towns, I'm talking about areas. It may be a city, it may be a county, but I'm talking about, let's go back and look at what happened to black people back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And one thing I will point you to is as you look at black suffering, black suffrage, look at the gains. Usually before we suffer a lot, we make some type of gain, some type of positive momentum, positive movement. Back in 1865, we experienced the Emancipation Proclamation, which basically freed the slaves, at least in writing anyway. We all know that it didn't happen in real life, but in writing, that's what happened. Shortly thereafter, you had all types of new laws coming into effect, black codes and Klan codes and racist codes and government policies that limited black movements, literally. So understand that after we were quote-unquote freed, we were enslaved under a different name. So one piece of paper freed us, another kept us in bondage. And that's something we're going to look at tonight. Now, one particular area caught my attention as I was doing some research for this particular show tonight, and that was Forsyth, Georgia. In 1912, there were 1,098 blacks living in Forsyth County, Georgia. Within a matter of months, that number went from 1,098 all the way down to 30. What people are calling that is racial cleansing. There's a reporter named Elliot Jaspin. He's been researching this for a long time, evidently. He calls that a racial cleansing. And he looks right in the face of people from this town and tells them that's what it was. And I respect this man for that because it's hard to go into a racist town and look people in the eyes and say, well, yeah, you're being racist. And this is not a brother, by the way. So let's not get it twisted. These facts are coming from men who researched this information, and he also reported on the fact that the Atlanta Journal-Constitution has a history of reporting lightly on racism, being real soft. And we think about it, most of the papers that you see around the country nowadays especially, they don't really say the right things about what's going on. I mean, who does really? Right now in America, if not for the crazy black activist and a couple of, you know, people up on a podium who are trying to get those activists to vote for him, you don't really have people saying white supremacy is wrong, this guy's a white supremacist, he's oppressing our people, they're starving us, they're stealing from us, robbing us, murdering us. People aren't laying down the facts and making people digest them. What they're doing is they're having hot flashes and then they go on somewhere cooling off, and then the subject just changes. They sweep it under the rug and hope it goes away. Well, what you had happening across America after slavery was a cleansing. You had a lot of white people in the southern states going from literally door to door, terrorizing the individuals in these towns. In Forsyth, one of the individuals testified that the story is such that they were told to leave or die. They accused a young man of a crime, and this individual, and by the way, I said this before in a show we did about, you know, race riots, which is really a massacre. Anytime you have white people attacking black people where they live, white history teaches that that is called a race riot. That is not a race riot, and it can never be a race riot, because a riot involves two parties going crazy, different groups, different factions going crazy together. This actually is one group going to the living quarters of another, outnumbering them and intimidating them, murdering them, and attacking them to the point where they either leave or they die. And always, always these groups of mobsters murder, and if not murder, they at least beat close to death several black people to prove their point. Then they drag them around town, parade them around town, put them on display to let the others know that if you do not leave, this is what's going to happen to you. That's exactly what happened in Forsyth. These people were intimidated, beaten, bludgeoned, and forced to evacuate their property. They were so intimidated, they didn't have time to sell the property. They didn't have a thought to try to do anything other than to run for their lives. That's what you call a racial cleansing. And that's what you have white Americans doing across this country in several locations. That's why you have so many counties where you have 97 or 98 or 99% white people only. And that's not uncommon. I believe I quoted a stat not long ago where I said that in the UK, 90% of the whites claim they have no meaningful or substantial relationship with black individuals. In the United States, 40% of the white population claims that they have no meaningful relationship to black individuals. Not at work, not at home, personal life, nothing. Now, what does that tell you? When someone says to you that they have no relationship with black people, they live in a country that's roughly 13% black, that should give you some type of warning. And by the way, remember, when you're talking 40% of white population, that's close to 100 million people. That's a lot of people. That's a tremendous number of individuals. We're not talking like one or two crazy people. We're not talking about one or two crazy towns. We're talking about tens of millions of people saying they have no meaningful interaction. And what does that mean when it's time to make hard decisions? Well, it means they're not attached to you. They don't know you. There's a guy, Phil Bettis, who's actually a lawyer, but also a town official, who actually said that he doesn't feel that anything is owed to the people who lost their property in Forsyth. Now, his rationale is this has been over 100 years. He gives that same argument, well, why didn't they do something sooner? Now, he does not explicitly state this, but he implies this very clearly. So his idea of fairness would be, well, if we are ganging up on you, murdering you, surrounding you by Klan members, and attacking you, gone like quicker, guys, gone like tomorrow, not a year from now, or 10 years, or 20 years, or 100 years. knowing doggone well that there's no real opportunity to respond to this, knowing that responding to this is not a possibility. Because responding to this actually equals death. If the Strickland family, which is one of the folks from the actual town, I'm sorry, the county of Forsyth, if they would have went back and tried to regain their lands or negotiate with these thugs, and by the way, can you really negotiate with a clan? I mean, can you really negotiate with these groupings of large, insane people who have nothing on their mind except murder and mayhem? And they've already proven to you that they will shoot you, rape, kill, plunder your town, plunder your neighborhood, plunder your house. How exactly do you work things out with them? You don't. And it's interesting because the Strickland family went back to Forsyth looking at their property, and, you know, you could trace the deed. Morgan Strickland was the individual that owned the property back in 1910, 1912, and you can see very clearly that he bought the property, but you cannot see where the property went. You can't see exactly who he sold it to. So he bought it, and then later on in time, it was sold to someone else, different name, seemingly no affiliation to Morgan Strickland. So this black man owned over 37.5, perhaps a little bit more, but he owned dozens of acres worth of land. And you can find where he bought the property, but you cannot find exactly who he sold it to or how it was sold. That's very bizarre. And it's bizarre because they know doggone well he didn't sell it. It was stolen from him. He was pushed out and told to go away. You come back, you got some bullets waiting for you. So that's what happened there. And what we must understand is, as a people, we don't want to sit back and say, all white people are bad, let's hate them. No. Hate doesn't solve any problems. What we want to do is say, if we don't handle our business, this can happen to us. Time. And I'm talking right up into the 80s, 1980s. We even go up to today. I mean, when the stuff hits the fan, black people are the first ones that lose. We can even look at how the Kennedy sent the FHA loans, which actually had racism built into it, had racial barriers built into it. Segregation was built into this, the FHA guidelines. Did you know that? So we understand that the loans that were given to help people acquire land, they were built for white people to live in one place and blacks to live in another. And that's not even, like, debatable. So it's all just historical fact. But if you look at what's happening with the melanated man in America, since land ownership became wealth, they've been depriving us of land. And Forsyth County is just one example. When the Stricklands went back to look at the actual land that they had lost, these people down in Georgia got big, nice homes built on this land. The cheap ones are $200,000. Then they go up from there. And keep in mind, we're talking Georgia prices, so, you know, I'm in Connecticut, so a $200,000 house in Georgia is like four and a quarter up in Connecticut. I mean, beautiful homes. And on top of that, it's not one house. The land he owned, there are now several houses on this property, big ranches on this property. And they actually found where some of these folks, the Stricklands, the family, Strippers and Mosses, actually, they found where their relatives were buried on the property. Can you imagine that? You have a burial ground on your property, but now it's no longer your property. You didn't sell it, and your people are still buried there. That's not quite moral, or rather, should I say, morally upright. Is not fair, and it surely isn't justice. So when I say to folks, know your history, I don't mean that casually. I don't mean to say that I know everything, because I don't know everything. But what I do know is that blacks have been taken advantage of in America. And a lot of it has to do with the racist policies and the capitalist structure that we have here. Because capitalism, I mean, you may not want to agree with this, but capitalism will breed cheating. It'll breed theft. It'll cause people to do something strange for some change. It really will. So we're talking about capitalism. You're talking about people who are living on property that's valuable to other people. Those people will try to get that property by any means necessary. Speaking of that, let's go right back to 1865. Let's go right back. The Reconstruction period lasted for after Lincoln's death for President Johnson between 65 and 67, 1865 to 1867. During that time, these folks are trying to figure out how can they let the South back in, what to do with black people, and how to get this nation back on track. Now check this out. We talk about the Confederate flag all the time. And why is that flag still flying? Well, that flag still flies because at the end of the Civil War, the government of the United States forgave the bulk of the Confederates and their leadership. Just let it go. Let them do what they want to do. They say, you know what? You're forgiven. Get back to work. At that time, the Southerners, since they didn't have slavery, what they did was start to institute black codes. What did the black codes do? They maintained white supremacy. So basically, the blacks who were freed by the proclamation of emancipation were enslaved by the codes that were black. That's reality. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think a nation that allows codes to be created to curtail black advancement wanted black people owning property? These codes also gave rise to the Ku Klux Klan. They had to resurface. And keep in mind, before the Klan, you had, what's those guys' name? I want to say the Knights of the Golden Circle, I believe. I'll look that up in a second. But you've always had racist organizations in America. It wasn't just the Klan. And by the way, we tend to call them all the Klan because they're all basically acting the same and conducting themselves the same. But you're looking at an organization that is pretty much in existence by government, either decree or government blindness. And we all know they're not blind. Klan could not exist if the government did not allow them to exist, because they really are terrorists. So understand that. That's real. But these organizations served to keep black people in line or push them out of line, literally. And you will notice that when you look at eyewitness accounts for a lot of the atrocities that happened to us, along with the local police, there was also government military involvement, and it was also always Klansmen or racists who were Klan-esque, Klan-like, who were helping out the officials. Remember when that young lady got thrown to the ground down in Texas? There's some white men standing behind the young girl. They looked at inappropriate, and we're looking like, what's he doing there? Who is he? That goes back to how the legal system of America allows these Klan members or these Klan-like individuals to work in tandem with them. That's historically true. It happens. It's been happening. It's going to keep happening under this system. And I'm taking a minute to talk about the Klan because when we go back and look at more of our towns where we had to actually leave, we are looking at Klan involvement. So we're going to keep going. But before I keep going here, let me just bring in Brother Dennis. I know Brother Dennis got a few things he wants to say. How you doing, Brother D? What's going on, man?
Hey, can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear, loud and clear, my friend. I know we're a little bit off today because of that technical difficulty. I guess the actual network had some issues. So once again, the engineers are still working to resolve some of the problems. So if you got any glitches, don't worry about it. If we don't get everything in tonight, we might do a part two next week. So don't worry about it. But how's it going, brother?
Oh, man, wonderful. But like you were saying about the land acquisition and the clan activity. Listen, as early as the mid-80s, I knew a guy who literally in the state of Indiana had to hide in the back of a delivery truck because the Klan was out on the highway with the state police. And with land acquisition, I live here in Mississippi, and the oldest matriarch of my family recently passed. But before she passed, we had some issues with people moving the land barriers, moving fence lines. And, you know, she had to literally spend money to keep what was rightfully hers in the first place. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And when you say, you know, the recent, oh, yeah, it's still going on, brother. I just had to say
that. Oh, absolutely. And in 1901, there was a situation where I believe there was a black man accused of raping a girl, okay? And they lynched three brothers, like, quickly, like, straight up lynched them. Don't know what they did, but allegedly they were involved, so they lynched these brothers. Now, this is interesting because after they lynched these brothers, the story goes that the white men from the surrounding area lined up straight across the street from the black side of town, from where black people, the black houses were, the majority, and they opened fire on the entire black neighborhood in Pierce City, Missouri. People trying to hide in wells. Bullets were whizzing through the wells. People were hiding in the houses. Bullets whizzing through the houses. They had eventually ran through the woods. They were literally dodging a barrage of bullets. It was raining lead on these innocent people. Innocent. These people left town and could not return, obviously. What happened to their property? Now, that property is owned by white people. And the white people who own it pretend to have no clue as to what happened. Even though you go back and look at the record, you can see a black man owned it, then you can see where it somehow mysteriously appeared in someone else's hands. This is what's happening to blacks in the past. You have a, and once again, we came across this when we talked about the race riots, quote unquote, really a massacre. We spoke about this then. You always have the accusation of something happening to a white woman, then a black that is lynched or murdered, then you have scores of white people riled up coming in to shoot or to lynch or to hang or to destroy. This is what they do. It's like a pattern. It's like a pattern. So what we have to do as melanated people is understand when we leave these towns, like, for example, people know about Rosewood. What do you think happened to the land in Rosewood when we left? It wasn't given back to black people. Was given back to the Caucasians. And when I say given back, I mean if you bought it from them, you disappear. Somebody they know grab it. You know, people next door grab it. People around grab it. Or they sell it to someone that they know. That's very common. And we won't even, you know, when you look at the fact that you have Klan members to deal with, that's one thing. When you look at the fact that you have racist towns to deal with, that's another thing. But as Black Americans, we have to take a stern look, a strong look in the mirror, and realize that we have to not only fight the Klans and the towns, but also the general government, the larger government, the United States government. There was a time right around 1910, about 50 years after Lincoln's time, where we owned about 15 to 20 million acres of former slaveholding states. 15 to 20 million acres. Property, a large amount of it was along the shore, the coast. Property that no one really wanted. It was undesirable. Until the government decided that they, for some unknown reason, wanted to go into this land and start using some type of new technique to create man-made beaches. They tried to put in flood protection zones. See, this was something the government did to disrupt the land ownership of the Black man. There was no flood protection. There's no need to make these beaches. The Army dumped over 7 million cubic yards of sand in the Mississippi, into Mississippi, to create the longest man-made beach in the world. And remember, things were segregated back then. So if you turn this undesirable area into a luxury beach resort, who can go there? Who can live there? Well, white people can go there, which means Black people can't live there. They were drove off the property by your government. When W.E. Du Bois spoke about the color problem of summer, we're talking about the National Park Service and all this strange development they're doing in the Black areas. These are Black-owned areas, towns, cities. Whatever they were ours. Now the government comes in, pushes us off, turns it into a segregated, protected area for white people to go have fun. And guess how much this land is worth today? Hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions. God, brother, say it.
Billion.
And you know what caught me off guard? Did not know. You know, everyone's always talking about going to, you know, the beaches in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Okay? Do you know that Hilton Head, South Carolina, was once owned by African Americans?
I have no doubt.
That was owned by Black people. I never would have guessed this. You would have got me all day with trivia. I would have never guessed this. Owned this land. And they were pushed out of it, off the land, by something that this individual, this guy's name, what's his name, Andrew Carl, he calls it kleptocracy. K-L-E-P-T-O-C-R-A-C-Y, kleptocracy. This basically means that you have a governmental agency acting in a way that's immoral.
Well,
acting in a way.
Yeah.
But hey, what I'm saying to you is this. We have to understand that not only do they create, you know, laws to make it difficult for us to get land, Not only do they push us off the land using clan tactics, not only do they make us live away from all the stuff that we might enjoy that they enjoy, but we have to get our own stuff the hard way, then fight to keep it, then see our loved ones die because we don't want to give it up, then get chased away from it like we did something wrong, when in reality we did absolutely nothing wrong. Not a thing. And that's what's so disheartening about this, is that we're getting chased away from property. Now, let me go back here. Let me go back for a second. You know, we always talk about reparations. And in my arrogance, I have always taken reparations to mean that we need to get repatriated for slavery. We need to get something back for the labor that we put into this land, for the effort, for the loss of lives, for this way we were treated like savages, all that kind of nonsense that the Caucasians don't comprehend. I always thought reparations was paying us back for the atrocities of the Americanized form of slavery, living death. But do you know that that's not what it really is? In many cases, when black people talk about reparations, many of us are not talking about the 40 acres and a mule. We're talking about the acres that we had that we bought with legitimate money of our own, that white people stole from us. So I never thought of it that way. I've known that, you know, I've known this kind of stuff, you know, happens. I know that people do this. I know we've experienced this. But I never really thought about reparations referring to the fact that, wait a minute, they don't just owe us the 40 acres and a mule. They owe us that plus the land that I bought that you just chased me off of and murdered half my family. Because remember, there are people who come running out the house and get shot. There's families. There's instances where you have a husband and a wife and three, four kids, and half the family is shot dead coming out the burning house. There's instances where, you know, women are chased out of town without their husband. Children are running out of town without their family. There's so many different stories about the atrocities that happened to us in this country regarding the theft of land and theft of property and inhumane treatment. It's frightening. It's scary.
Black Wall Street is just one of those stories. I mean, you know, when you talk about Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know, these people were living across the tracks, living foul, and they just up and decided, hey, let's go over here and tear up what the black people got. And
well, yeah, basically.
I recently sent you the Missouri nigger hunting license. That's a legitimate document. They actually issued license in the state of Missouri to kill black people for any reason.
Well, you know what? That particular license, one thing we do know is we can't really track down exactly the government's legitimate connection to it. But we do know, however, that there were agencies within the government who had this document and claimed it was a joke internally.
Right.
See, you understand something. We have to know that evil never want to be perceived just as evil. It wants to look good. It wants to look like the light. And, you know, I know in sales we have a saying where nobody wants to be the bad guy, even the bad guy. So nobody wants to be perceived as a liar or a fool or anything bad. People always want to look good and feel good. That's why you give them so many positive words when you're selling something to them. Well, America is selling something to us. They're selling us this bogus dream of integration, this bogus dream of cooperation, this bogus dream of fairness. But when you look back through history, you see that America has done nothing except try to take what's ours. Even when we get land or property or businesses through our own efforts, independent of them, they find ways to steal from us. Here's an article, actually, that gives 11 ways the federal government contributed to the racial wealth divide. 11 ways. The first one is free land. White Revolutionary War veterans were given 9 million acres of Indian land. Given. And remember, we told you not too long ago that the actual laws of America were constructed in such a fashion to protect the white males from Africans, black people, Hebrews, whatever you want to call us, and the red man, the Indian, the indigenous. That's the way these laws were constructed. They legitimized squatting. In 1841, the U.S. government legalized squatting, allowing settlers to take over Indian lands. Military enforced squatting. Well, I'm sure you can figure that one out. Not only are we going to squat, we're going to send the military in to make sure you stay squatting. See, right there, that's stealing land from melanated people. Remember, black people were here before these Europeans came in. And a lot of land was ours already. Number four, more free land. In addition to the previous lands, they conquered half of Mexico and gave land ownership to all kinds of individuals for a fraction of its cost. All kinds of white settlers, no matter where they were from. As long as they were white and could pay taxes for a minor fee, they can get this land, period. If you owed taxes or if a person from Mexico or any other race other than white owed back taxes or missing paperwork, their lands were taken from them and given to Anglos. That's the way the law was working back then and today, by the way. When you look at the 1962 Homestead Act, 1.5 million white families were afforded millions of acres of government land. Millions. 1.5 million white families. See, when white people today think that they are, you know, that they're the product of working hard, they're the product of just good fortune, the product of their superior intellect, that's incredibly ridiculous and pathetic. And it couldn't be further from the truth. White people are the biggest, and I've said this on more than one occasion, white people are the biggest beneficiaries of government handouts in the history of this nation. No one can claim more handouts. I mean, white people got more handouts than anybody. Anybody. You can't even come close to get what they got. Not to mention the contracts on airline routes and TV and radio frequencies. You can't even fathom what's been given to them. And would you believe, when you talk about land ownership, there's two white men that own as much land as half of all the black people. That's insane. But back to this right now. Go right ahead, brother.
There's a new show. I don't know how new it is, but it says season 5, episode 7. But I found a promo for this show called Hell on Wheels. And it's set in, like, the
1800s. Oh, with Commons in it? And he's like, he's bald-headed and bearded?
Well, what I've got here is a segment where these two white guys are talking to an Indian and offering this guy land that the Indian already owns. And they're like, well, we want to, you know, give you something better. He's like, better than what? And they're like, the way you're living. He's like, I like the way I'm living. And then they're like, well, you know, we want to let you have some of this land. He's like, it is my land. And they're like, no, the United States government owns it. He's like, did you trade for it? Did you purchase it? And they were like, well, you know, and the other white guy who's a mediator is like, well, he's got a point. But the bottom line is, exactly, you know, America was taken by force. And the people who owned this land not only were displaced, but they were killed off by biological warfare before it was even a valid term. So yeah, you got a valid point.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when you start looking at the fact that in this country, we almost are oblivious to reality.
Oh yeah.
I know a few things. You know, I've read a couple of things. Start reading some of these articles and look at some of these excerpts from these different books. You start seeing very clearly how America is a very, very foul, foul organization. And I say organization because that's really what they are. They're like a corporation just ripping things apart and using them for scraps or selling off the good parts and discarding the bad parts. I mean, it's a very bizarre organization that we are dealing with here. And their mentality is such that they have no value for human life, especially the life of a melanated person. I mean, you know, one thing I must say is, you know, we get into these night riders and these people who terrorize these different towns, you know, over in Kentucky, for example. Well, these individuals, they were not just terrorizing black people. They were terrorizing white people also. They were sick individuals. And don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here trying to have a pity party for the world. What I'm saying to you, however, is that the people we're up against, they don't just abuse people who are different than them. They abuse people who look just like them also. But speaking of these night riders, and by the way, you know, the night riders were an organization out of Kentucky and Tennessee. Back in March 8th of 1908, there was over 100 armed men, probably closer to 1,000, because these people had 5,000 members 1 year, then they had like another 10,000 joined out of fear. But I believe it was over 1,000 armed men on horseback, but let's say 100 armed men on horseback raided a black part of town, shooting 7 people, killing pretty much 3. And these numbers are just this is from an article from Atlanta Black Star. From my readings about the night riders and what happened in Kentucky, these numbers are off dramatically. They were a much larger organization, and they killed a lot more people. They were murderous. They were just a sick. This was perhaps one of the most efficient and brutal organizations that we've seen in this country for terrorizing black people and other people. They were brutal. Okay? As a matter of fact, the Night Riders was a special sect of this organization called the PPA. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But what they did was they actually were in a dispute with tobacco companies, and they were upset because the tobacco price was pushed so far down that they couldn't make a profit. And there's stories about how people were working all year to sell their tobacco, and they go and sell it, end up breaking even or losing money. So they worked the whole year and made no money. And, you know, those white folks aren't going to have that. They're going to start welding out. Remember, poverty and crime go together. Their own science and social science teaches you that. So poverty and crime go together. So when white people get poor, what do? The same thing everybody else does when they get poor. They turn to crime. These white people became criminals called the Night Riders. They were attacking black families and white families alike. But they really, really, really were targeting blacks and terrorizing them. And we could document 14 cases specifically where blacks were driven off their land in Birmingham, Kentucky. Okay? And these people lost 60 acres of farmland and 21 city lots. And all of them were sold at sheriff sales at extremely low prices. See, that's how they get you. When you abandon your land, you're not paying the taxes, and you're not keeping up your property. Well, if you don't pay your taxes, they can foreclose. Put a lien on your property, foreclose, take your land because you didn't pay your taxes. If you don't keep up the property, well, you're neglecting the property. It's a blight. It's a problem for the rest of the town. They could take it and sell it then too. And that's what they were doing. They were pushing people out of town by murdering, lynching, shooting, whatever they could do to get, burning them out, whatever they could do to get them out of town, they got them out of town. Then they took their land and brought it back to the Caucasian side of town, literally. You'll find that many of these instances where black people lose land, some white person comes in from someplace nearby and now owns that property. And we have to understand that these individuals, they really have no moral imperative that prevents them from being straight up devils in the flesh. And I'm not saying that all white people are devils. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying, however, is that there are several white people in this country who are either working for the devil, in league with them, reading his favorite book, whatever you want to call it. But these individuals are straight up evil. You have to be real nasty to run a family out of their home with nothing but the clothes on their back, carrying babies in bags of food. That's something that's straight up evil. And only to take what's theirs to gain monetarily. I look at this as an assault, not just on the physical form, but on the spiritual form also. And when I tell people to look at America very closely, understand that when you look at the actual original words that the natives called this land, you can find some very sinister descriptions. And these people who are here now fit those descriptions. So understand that historically, black people have had land. They've worked hard, bought land, not a government handout, not a freebie. People bought land and had it stolen by poor, set, disgruntled white people. That's a fact. Now, let's have a look here, folks. Now, once again, this is Black Thoughts and Theory Radio Show. And, of course, we are talking about Black America lost and stolen land. I, of course, am Alex Primo. With me right now, we have the brother, Dennis Jefferson. And what we're going to do is keep talking about our experience here in this country, talking about the fact that we came here against our will. We worked here under the most extreme circumstances. We survived here with death at our backs. And when we achieve success, what happens? We're attacked for it. When we move in the right direction, we're attacked for it. When we seek to build a better place for ourselves and our families, we are attacked for it. So I ask you this. Does America really want to see a successful melanated man? And the answer is obviously no, because if he did, he would not destroy every attempt we've had at making progress separate from him. See, remember, I'm not talking about these sellouts, I'll call them that for now, these integrationists who have no problem merging into society. I'm not talking about those people, because their success is not our success. Our success enhances black people globally. Regionally, locally rather, regionally, and then nationally, then globally. Our success helps us all. But when those who do not support us succeed, it doesn't help any of us really. I mean, let's face it. What has Michael Jordan's success done for you? Think about that. And if you're thinking a free turkey every Thanksgiving is something, you got a problem. Now, What I do want to talk about is the fact that we have to come up with a strategy to deal with this. How do we combat the fact that we own less property now than we did 100 years ago? How do we come to terms with that? What do we do? You know, if I look at these different towns, Hickman, Kentucky, and once again, this is 1908. You have 50 hooded white men surrounding the homes of black farmers. The mob shoots at the house. Walker shoots back. This guy's name is David Walker. They surround his house. They shoot at his house. He shoots back. They burn the house. They hit the house with some fire bombs, fire, torture, whatever you want to call it. Four young children and his wife come running out the house. He's running out the house too. Baby crying in her arms. These most likely white Christian good old boys shot them all, leaving only three children that survived.
Don't call them Christians.
Well, what I'm saying is that they call themselves.
Yeah, don't.
They obviously don't believe in what they read or what they hear in from the pulpit. But my point to you is, we have to understand that these individuals use whatever tools they have against us. That's what they do. And we have to understand that people like Walker shot back at these people. Having a gun is not a good enough strategy, because he had a gun to shot back and still died. Still died. Half his family died. And the 2.5-acre farm that he owned, where'd it go? To his neighbor, the white guy next door. The white guy next door then sold it to another man whose daughter owns it to this day. And you wonder why we don't have the wealth they have. Maybe we aren't good enough criminals. Maybe we don't steal right. I mean, is that what it is? Maybe we, instead of stealing cars and sneakers, we should steal land.
You know,
deeds.
Alex, if I may interject, man, I live down here in the South, and I see way too often that our people tend to be short-sighted. I don't know if you call it conditioning or what, but a person gets a piece of land, a younger person. As a matter of fact, even some older people, they come into some land. You know, they don't think about timbering the land and leasing the land. Their first thought tends to be selling the land. And the one thing I tell a lot of people is they're not making any more land. You know, if you got some land, hold on to it. But, you know, like recently I knew a guy, he sold like close to 80 acres. And he was like, well, it ain't making me no money. And, you know, he was told, hey, timber it. If he timbered the land, he would have got roughly $30,000 less than what he made selling it. But he still would have had the land, and then he could have leased the land. But a lot of times, you know, they're short-sighted. The only thing they see is money now, and then when the money is spent, you know, they don't know what to do except for, well, if I got some more, I'm going to sell it. And we need, you know, we need to teach each other and learn that, you know, we got to learn at some point in time that they're not making any more land. If you've got land, hold on to it tooth and nail. I mean,
check this out. Check this out. It's funny you say that. In 1964, which is not that long ago, the state of Alabama sued Lyman Williams and Lawrence Hudson, claiming these two cousins did not rightfully own 240-acre farms that their family had worked on for nearly a century. This is Sweetwater, Alabama. The land, officials contended, belonged to the state. Now, Circuit Judge Hildreth urged the state to drop the lawsuit, saying it would result in severe injustice. But the state refused, saying they wanted income from the timber on the land.
Right.
The judge ruled in favor of the state. The state's internal memo and letters on the case are peppered with references to the family's race. In the same courthouse where the case was heard, the AP located deeds and tax records documenting that the family had owned the land since an ancestor bought it January 3rd, 1874. Surviving records also show the family paid all their taxes from the mid-50s up until the land was taken. I tell people all the time that in America, land ownership is a very subjective thing when you're dealing with the government. The government has written provisions into their law that allows them to take any piece of property or anything at all in this country that they need to secure a better future for the same self-government.
Yeah, that's called public domain law.
Precisely. But my point is, understand that when you're dealing with eminent domain, you're dealing with a government that's planning on your failure or planning to be a predator at some point in time. That's a predatory practice. The government should have everything it needs without taking what you have.
Oh, yeah.
So what we're doing right now is we're feeding the beast. We're allowing our government to grow unchecked. And it's going to keep doing these weird things until we put them in their place, because these two brothers lost land that was theirs. But let me explain something also to you. Remember that the United Nations is also coming in and protecting heritage parcels across the globe. And what they're doing is they're preventing people from disturbing these lands.
Have they been able to recoup their land since this debauchery?
What do you mean recoup? Brother.
I mean,
my brother, I live.
Documents,
it's over.
He's still in place.
They're not getting that back.
Oh, get out, man.
No. There's no remix. It's over. That song's been played on the radio. They're following it. It's gone. It's done. I mean, you got to stand something. People have ice in their veins. They don't have a heart that's beating like you and me. I'm telling you right now, you start studying how they steal from us. Once again, this is property that was bought. I haven't even gotten to the property that we were given. These are all people who bought their land from hard work. No government assistance, nothing. See, what we got to understand is even the government assistance works against us. This government wants us to fail. And I say that with confidence because when you look at the laws and the way they're written, for example, a few weeks ago when everybody's mad about the Confederate flag, I said, how could this flag fly? How is it possible that this flag flies? Well, it's possible because your government allows it. When the North defeated the South, they let them keep doing what they were doing. You can't have Jim Crow laws without the North being complicit. You can't have black codes without the North being complicit. These are things they both were guilty of. And by the way, don't forget that some of the northern states were some of the last states to get rid of slavery. Wasn't New Jersey the last northern state to get rid of slavery, I believe? So we're talking about the fact that the North may talk to you like they're against slavery, but, I mean, Rhode Island and Connecticut were some of the first states to have slavery. That's in the North. So let's not get it twisted. We're talking about real-life racism. And you know, if the term is not accurate, they call me and correct the term. But when I say racism or racist, I'm talking about a group of people who serve to oppress our people. I'm not going to get into the fact that they got to have power control, because let's face it, if you're a black person and you're arguing with a white person and the cops come, I can pretty much guarantee you're going to have a tougher time talking to those cops than that white person.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's racism.
Well,
I want to
talk about the fact that the short-sightedness of people selling the land. You know, Dr. Joy Uri, she talks about the post-traumatic slave syndrome, and
mm-hmm,
she talks
indeed.
About, you know, the symptoms of that. And the term I believe she uses is a fear of an uncertain future. And it causes people to not be able to think that they're going to live any longer or plan for the future. I think that is a common thing amongst melanated people.
Agreed.
Because of everything that's happened in the past. Every time we try to store up and save or build something up, it gets torn down, not by our hands, but, you know, the government, a white mob, whomever.
Well, you know, now it's us. I mean, because if you got a guy that comes into, like, say, 89 acres, and you know, because the white neighbor brought a pie over once, you know, I'm going to sell it to the white guy because he's been real nice to us. You know, it just makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I mean, a pie don't make that man nice. That means he wanted something from you.
Well, you know, speaking of, you know, if I came into some land like that because I understand zoning and what zoning can do, I would get it rezoned and do something with it.
Well, we're talking about rural land, you know, so it's farmland. And the only thing the guy had to do was timber the trees and pay the taxes.
Just to give you a perspective, we own less than 1% of the rural land in the nation right now. That's crazy.
I'm less than that now.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's because a lot of it was people's rights.
Indeed.
And I'd like to take that a step further. You know, it's all well and good to own the land, but if you don't own what's beneath the land.
Oh, yeah, mineral rights.
You kind of out of luck.
Yeah, because, you know, even down here in southern Mississippi, my family owns some land. And there was some oil. And what happened is that they did not sell the mineral rights, but they did not know the particulars about it. So a guy set up a well next to their land, and he didn't drill straight down. He drilled at an angle.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, he bought the land adjacent, and then he drilled at an angle. And he got what he wanted anyway.
You know what? I'm going to go off on a tangent here for a second. Let me just say this. We need to understand that if we can't protect something, we don't own it.
Indeed.
We don't own it. I respect all of our brothers from, you know, Black Wall Street, Rosewood, you know, I mean, Birmingham, Kentucky, all these different places. I know there's brothers who fought back, shot back, fought hard, died. No disrespect at all. But let me be very clear about something. One thing reading about our history teaches me is that we have to literally be ready to fight as an organized weapon, as an army, as a team, as a military machine to defend our property, our resources, our whatever we get and want to keep. We have to literally be able to defend from anyone. And that may sound crazy, but I'm telling you right now, if you don't understand that if we build a successful multi-billion dollar distinct powerful black empire right now within this nation, and it's going to be attacked. It's going to be attacked. It's going to be attacked viciously by your government, by white racists, by racist sympathizers who sympathize with the government and the racist, you know, cronies. We're going to be
or a corporate takeover like Viacom did BET.
Well, you know what's funny? And I'll get into that in a second, but you got to understand something. We are dealing with a nation who historically steals from us, attacks us, murders us, and then waits for us to accept it. They wait for us to get used to it and become comfortable with it. They don't apologize properly. They don't make reparations. They don't do anything. They just wait for us to deal with it, tell us to shut up and take it. So when you're talking to me about black success, I'm talking to you about black militias, black self-government, black self-policing, black weapons of protection and defense. We need to be ready to defend ourselves, because if we do not do that, then we will not survive. Because every instance of black success you can name is either gone, minimized, or pretty much, well, that's it. I mean, there's no great black town you can go to. Atlanta's been corrupted. I mean, when you think about black success, there's no black Wall Street. We're going back 100 years to talk about black Wall Street.
Basically.
We need to understand that we got to do that again today, except this time we have to have a trained military component. That's real. Not being crazy. That's not being, you know, paranoid. That's being practical. Because if we don't have individuals who are trained and committed to protecting our property, we'll be destroyed. Just like just like the residents of Black Wall Street in Tulsa. We still have no idea how many people died there. We don't know how many people died in Rosewood or Tulsa or any of these towns. And a lot of these people, we don't know where they're buried.
Now, but see, there's
Go right ahead.
If we try, I mean, now, we already know that the deck is stacked against us. And we know that other people can form militias and get compounds and things of this nature, and they can run them legitimately. But every time we make a move towards a movement, we get these little tiny holes with red viscous fluid, and then we get political prisoners. So how do we get past that point?
Here's where I'm at. I have seen no big improvement in the United States government. I don't see a difference between Johnson and Clinton. I don't. I don't see a difference between, you know, Nixon and the Bushes. These people are all the same to me. And when you look at, like, some of the stuff Kennedy did, he looks like he fits right in with them also, believe it or not. Lincoln, too. I mean, read how Lincoln said, literally, that he doesn't believe that the black man should receive equal rights to the white man. Read what this man said about that. I mean, that's ridiculous. But my thing to you is this. We had better get it through our heads that if we want success and freedom, people will die. If we want to do well and live like we want to live, people will die. If we want to stop the white supremacists from attacking us, murdering us, people will die. Anything that we want that in any way disturbs or minimizes the reign of white supremacy equals death to many melanated. So your choices are to keep going where you're going and take that slow death, or take a stand and fight back and either win or die on your feet like a man. Those are your choices. Because if you don't fight back, you're going to die. I mean, it's coming. They have not militarized the police just for ha-has.
Right.
You don't give a police department in Ferguson a tank, a MRAP, just because they need a tax deduction or because it was cheap. They don't do that. They're putting these pieces in place to subjugate you. I mean, I think blacks have really herded around, what, 15 metropolitan centers across the country? So if you take those 15 centers, we can research that for another show. But I guarantee you every one of those centers, those urban districts, I guarantee you that they're fully loaded with military gear. I guarantee you that, complete with drones. I guarantee you that. My point is this. We can pretend that everything's okay and keep letting things slide, but they're not letting anything slide.
No.
These are the same people that when they came to Tulsa, they didn't come to protect the black people being slaughtered. They started slaughtering the black people too.
Bombed them from the air.
So when we're talking about building a new Black Wall Street, you're a fool if you don't build a new Black Wall Street with its own army. And if the government doesn't like it, then show me where it's unconstitutional. Show me where it's illegal for us to do what everybody else does. If it isn't, leave us alone. If it is, do what you're going to do. Because they're doing it anyway. It's not like they're not going to kill you. They're killing you now. See,
I mean,
if you're afraid that the government's going to kill you, you must not be watching TV. They're killing you already. If they are cool with Trayvon Martin getting shot coming home with Skittles, they have no problem seeing you get shot and murdered by a vigilante. If they have no problem with the cop shooting Tamir Rice, 12 years old, shot within 1.8 seconds in a park playing with a toy gun, if they're okay with him getting shot, they're okay with you getting shot too. If you think that Eric Garner getting choked out was like, you know, something, no, they're okay with that. They're okay with all the things that you're afraid might happen if you do something. They're doing the things already that they might do if you do something. You're just saying you're happy it's not you. And I'm saying it is you, if not today, tomorrow. Because this is only going to get worse. This historically does not get better. If you look at what white people right now are still, there's still Nazis in the world. There's neo-Nazis in America and Germany. They're here and there, both. So still Nazis around. There's still Klan members around. The Klan is growing. The Klan is growing right now. So if history tells me that blacks make progress, the Klan pops up. The Klan kills black people when they pop up. That's like, what, 2-3 times now already? So the Klan popped up now. Why? Are blacks making progress or trying to? What are they going to do? What does the Klan do when blacks are making progress? They impede it. They seek to diminish it. They start murdering people, attacking people, scaring people, sending flyers to their house, putting flyers on their lawn. We got to understand that we're talking about America, the same country that thought having slaves do their work for them was a good idea. The same country that thought beating slaves pretty much to death was a good idea. The same country that would have said all men are created equal. Oh, wait, but not you guys. The same country that sat around eating food with their family, having fun while you were hanging from a rope dying. That's a ritual, people. That's a death ritual. That's satanic. See, because so many of us are disconnected from our true spirituality, we don't understand evil. We don't see it anymore. But what do you call a group of people who sit around smiling and cheering while a man is drooling and gagging on a rope, dying. Evil. And if you don't know it, now you do. I'm telling you, folks, we got to realize that America has never been good to us. Never. And you can't show me how they have been. You think because you live in a better hut that you're not a slave? You think because they tell you that you can go here or back, you can't even go here or there. You can't drive where you want to drive. You think you can? Go ask Sandra Bland about it. Let's ask Sister Sandra, can you drive where you want to drive?
Oh.
Because I watched, there's a video called Banished. You should all watch this video. Matter of fact, I might post it later called Banished. This one brother, Strickland, said he couldn't believe that his family owned land in Forsyth County, Georgia, because saying amongst themselves was always, don't let the sun go down and catch you in Forsyth, Georgia, Forsyth County.
Now, we still got those signs in Indiana, man. Come on.
Not signs, sayings. I'm sorry if I said it funny. They're
no,
sayings.
Got billboards.
But see,
Indiana with actual billboards to say that.
Wow. And this is what I mean by, we must understand that we are facing what's called a culling. We are being thinned. We're being murdered. We're being weakened, and we're being led out to slaughter. If you think it's coincidence that rap music degrades us, the new rap music has our men dressing funny, our women dressing funnier, and it tells us that we are the N-word, which is the lowest word they can say to us purposefully. And I don't care what you think it used to mean. It means something else in America. Look at how you act and how you look. You don't look like a king. And you know, African king looking like you. Okay? And African king with his pants hanging off his butt. And African king can't speak his language eloquently. I can't think of any African I ever hear on TV, any of them, that talk like a moron, talk like an idiot. I don't see it. They talk like men. And none of them embrace homosexuality. Yet the brothers over here, well, except for the ones trying to get down to the U.S., of course, that's a different story, but the ones over here are cool with anything, everything. They're just happy with whatever comes their way. So our music degrades us, teaches us that we're worthless. Our TV shows reinforce that. The mass media tells you that you're in the bottom of the totem pole and we're watching you out to get you. You're bad, you're bad, you're bad. Everything points to us in a negative way. As we're being murdered across the globe, you think this is by accident? So you think the military gear and the degrading music, the GMOs, the air pollution, you think the advent of the United Nations coming into America now, these are all accidental things? How do they connect? They connect with depopulation. Depopulation. That's one of the principal concepts of Luciferian destruction of this globe. It's to depopulate billions of people. Go ahead, my brother.
I'm still stuck on the same question. We saw, what was that, the early 60s or mid 60s, COINTELPRO?
Yep.
Okay, now, of all the members of that got arrested, you know, amidst a federal lie, Geronimo Pratt was the only one to get out, and it took him 27 years to get out. Now, Brother Stokely Carmichael, or Kwame Ture, who I had the distinct pleasure of meeting, was exiled from this country. How do we change this? I mean, because it was a blatant lie that put this man in jail for almost 30 years. And then there are members or friends of his that are still languishing in jail. How do we change that? I mean, because we know that they didn't do what they were accused of. It's been brought out in the public, you know, with the document releasing that, okay, they didn't do it. Why are they still in jail? How do we change that?
Let me make this very clear. We need to understand that whatever we do is going to be painful.
Yes.
And I think a lot of us are just too weak to deal with the pain. But how do we deal with this? Well, if we take the example of the Panthers, well, we arm ourselves. If we take the example of the Panthers, we start making demands and making statements. For example, if you really don't want your leader arrested, you tell them you're not arresting them. And whatever they do next, let them do what they're going to do. But see, I don't think black people understand that what these people have planned, there's nothing that you're going to do by sitting back waiting that's going to change it.
Yes.
They want to murder your black ass. Straight up.
What you got to do is just put that first foot forward and keep moving.
We have to do what's right by us and step on a righteous path and never look back. See, my thing is, if you live with fear, you become the defeated. If you walk with courage, then you cannot be defeated. We must understand that we need to be internally strong, and no matter what comes against us, we face it. But we cannot do that sitting back thinking, well, the white man's going to change. Well, the government's going to get, they're going to be good to us. They're going to do right. They have never done right by you and never will. How else could you remain at the bottom of the totem pole? How else? See, that's one thing that boggles my mind. You were brought here from a Kelbulon and thrown into the pit. You're thrown to the bottom of the ladder. Hundreds of years later, where are you? You're still at the bottom of the ladder. Except now, you're not as smart as the Hebrews or the Africans or the Israelites or Moors, what do you want to call them, that came here. You're not as smart as they were, because they were smart enough to know that these white people here, they're the enemy. We got to fight against that. They knew that. These people today, they're so stupid, they think the people who have them in captivity are their friends. They think that they're the bottom of the totem pole by accident. They don't know that the average white person has 10 to 20 times more wealth than they do. That 70% of all white people own property. Only 42% of black people do. They don't know this. They don't care. They think it's all by accident. They think Kennedy was a good guy when his programs actually gave the white people at least a generation or two head start on land ownership with these government programs like FHA loans, low interest rate loans, low down payment loans. See, black people don't understand that this government was created to empower white people. That's why they hate when you say black power, because this government, the whole system, is about white power. And black power negates white power. Historically, in ancient times, black power did not even allow the existence of white power. Black power is the, when black power is here, white power cannot remain. It dissipates, it's destroyed. And they know this. We have to understand that our job is not to hate white people. Our job is to hate being in bondage, to hate being kept at the bottom of that ladder, to hate being subjected to oppression, racist, you know, attitudes, mental torture, being imprisoned for no reason. I mean, when you look at the laws that were passed, the whole purpose of these black codes was to give black people stiffer sentences than white people. That's why it's so stupid when black people say, well, if you did the crime, do the time. No, stupid. If a white person does the same crime, they don't do the time or they do less time, either no time or less time.
You know,
I mean, if you hold on, please. If you look at, for example, Kim Davis. Now, I'm not mad at Kim Davis. My girl said, I don't believe in giving homosexuals licenses. I'm not giving them to them. I'd rather go to jail. Okay, she goes to jail. Does she die in jail? No, she doesn't. Does she have a problem getting out? No, she doesn't. She's released the next week just like clockwork.
Well, you know, last year, one of the DuPonts raped his own 3-year-old daughter, and the judge gave him probation saying that he would not fare well in jail.
I saw that.
And then just, what was it, last week, I don't know where this white guy was from or if his family was affluent or whatever, but this guy left a child in a pool of blood after a rape, and he was given probation. And I'm sitting here going, how does that work? I mean,
well,
seriously.
It works because they're white. See, I'm telling you right now, understand something. Look to Europe. Now, you can make all kind of strange comments and say, well, it started someplace else. That's fine. But Europeans are very comfortable with two things, homosexuality and sex with children. They're comfortable with that. You cannot deny it. They have festivals historically called Saturnalia and others where they actually practice homosexuality and sex with children. That's a historical fact. Look up Saturnalia. Look at how they got drunk and how they went from house to house and doing all kind of strange sexual rituals, and it's what they do. I mean, look at why they kiss each other under the mistletoe. Look up all these supernatural things and this deviltry that they are into. That's all part of this sick satanic religion that they're into. See, that's why I keep telling people that when you're disconnected spiritually, you don't see the whole picture. You don't understand that all these, for example, the United Nations is having a big problem right now with their peacekeepers raping people. See, first they send peacekeepers who carry guns, by the way. I keep forgetting that guns are a part of keeping peace, you know, so they go to keep peace with the guns, and then they rape people when they're there. That's interesting. And for those of us who are looking at this from a deeper perspective, we equate the United Nations with an extension of Babylon, a rebirth of Babylon. The United States is the capital of Babylon, and then you have the United Nations being part of that Babylonian establishment to reunite the entire globe. And if you read my posts, you'll see I've mentioned this often. I probably post almost every day about the United Nations because they're always doing something strange. Always. But now they have a big thing with rape. And I tell people, when you read Genesis chapter 6, the angels who fell, the ones who left the original habitation, the Bene Ha Elohim, who actually made it with the daughters of man, they actually suffered from lust. They saw the daughters of men and found them attractive, found them beautiful, found them lovely, and they took as many of them as they wanted and made wives of them. That's why sexual debauchery is so rampant across this globe, because that evil spirit is part of the society. Sexual debauchery is part of the deviltry. That's why you have expressions like sex sales. When you watch TV, you see so much sex now. All kind of strange and bizarre sex activity. That's all, matter of fact, Aleister Crowley was into sex magic. Isn't that Thelema? Is that what they call it? Sex, the sexual religion, sex magic? So what I'm saying is...
I'm sorry, did I hear somewhere recently that they're trying to reclassify pedophilia. Yeah, pedophilia. That was just this year, wasn't it? They're trying to reclassify it.
that that's been going on. That's been going on for decades. They've been doing that for a long time. But see, the difference now is they have a foot in the door. See, once your boy Obama, not you personally, but once Obama approved this whole marriage equality thing, he broke down a lot of barriers. So now it's going to be very hard to tell people who are sexually different. Thank you. that it's going to be hard to tell them that they're wrong when they want to do something, because you've told the world that that's wrong, but it's right now. So if that's wrong and it's right, why can't this wrong be right? That's going to be a big problem. And I already told people, marriage equality has pretty much made the Bible an illegal document. If you read the scripture about about stoning homosexuals, that could be a hate crime.
Oh yeah.
See, what's happening right now is we are witnessing the spiritual war becoming physical. But that being said, we are out of time. I think what we're going to do here, I think next week we're going to have a part two to this. I think we'll come back at this show next week. We'll start over. We get right back into it. There's so much. I didn't even get to the government land that was given to blacks and taken back. We didn't even get to that. So next week we're going to come back in. We're going to do the whole show again, maybe at least half a show. We'll get back into lost and stolen lands, and we'll cover some other topics too. But I want to thank everyone for tuning in this week. We'll see you next week. God bless you. Have a good night. Take care. Good night, everybody.
Right. You still there, Ms. Verna? Ms. Verna?